Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Specialist Burnham.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
And we're back. Thanks so much for listening to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. My name is Jordan Hoffman. I am your host. I'm thrilled, honored, pleased, tickled, and amused to be in your ears right now. You can find me on the internet, facebook.com/engage, the official Star Trek podcast. You can tweet at me at Jay Hoffman. And we're done with our recaps. Brian's with us again today. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jordan.
We're done with our recaps. Last week, we discussed and analyzed and riffed about episode 115 of Discovery. And now, no new Discovery for a long time. We don't know exactly how long.
We do not. But we know it's coming. That's good enough.
You want to take a bet?
Sure.
Let's do a pool. It is today. We're recording this a little earlier than you're going to hear it. Today is February... What is today?
The 11th.
Okay. It's February 11th. Today, February 11th, is the day that the last episode of Season 1 of Discovery went on the air. On the streams. When will Season 2 begin? Knowing what we know... that these shows take a long time to produce and a long time to do post-production on. Knowing that there's probably going to be some casting involved in this new one, which means scheduling. February 11th, when will we be back talking season two? Tick, tock, tick, tock.
Tick. I'm going to give a very specific date.
It's going to be a Sunday.
It's going to be a Sunday.
All right. I'm going to do mine, too. Let me get my phone. I don't have my phone with me.
I'm going to say it is going to be Sunday, February 10th.
Wow. Okay. I was going to go for January.
Possibly.
I was going to say January.
I'm pretty sure we're not going to get it this year.
I feel that that's fair. Which, I mean, I'm not happy about. I would love it to be
exactly,
next week.
Yeah.
But I think I want to be realistic.
And I think with the streaming model, there's a lot less pressure to have that, show starts in the fall, ends in spring, starts again in the fall. Like I don't think that everything with streaming, they need to adhere to that.
So maybe it'll be later than January, February?
No. I'm thinking that a full year is...
Yeah, but they got
it. Think about it. If this was some other show that it ended around now, it would probably start up again in the fall. I don't think so. I think we're going to get... It's going to be in, January, February, around there.
Okay. I think you're right, too. I think that it's not going to be 2018. I think it's going to be, I'm going to say a little bit earlier. I think like first week back from the new year.
And they need to get the jump on Game of Thrones.
That's
coming back 2019. And
what month?
We don't know yet.
Cut them off. Cut their heads off. Do, do, do. It's the best theme song ever.
It's a good theme song.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Brian, let me tell you something.
It's been a long day, hasn't it?
Yeah. But I don't know when, Star Trek's coming back, but it's going to be a while. So why did I even bring that up? Because... We're done with our recaps, and now we're moving forward. We're going to talk about other things in Star Trek. But before we do, we got one more bit of Discovery Season 1. One final taste. For those of you who can't get enough, we got, because otherwise it would just not be it. So guess what? Black Alert.
Black Alert. Black Alert.
We were there at the taping of After Trek, which occurs the same day. Today. It was a few hours ago, the 11th. So after Trek, we recorded an episode of After Trek, which was you and me, Sonequa Martin-Green, who plays the part of Michael Burnham in a television show called Star Trek Discovery, and Anthony Rapp. And they put us in a nice room upstairs. It was really nice. I got to say thank you to the After Trek team. The producers there, they didn't need us hanging around. We're just, you know, gnats in the way with our recorders. Hey, we want to tape. But they really went out of their way to help out. There was no upside to them, but they gave us a room. They set us up. They gave us a place to plug in, and then
didn't give us chicken fingers.
They did. We just didn't get there fast enough. They almost gave us chicken fingers. And we spoke to Sonequa, and we spoke to Anthony. And then after that, we spoke to Matt Myra. Matt Myra and I have been chums on the internet for a while, but we've never actually met face-to-face. So we talked. Matt Myra, of course, the host of After Trek, and he's been a podcaster for generations. He's a writer on the Goldbergs. Very funny man. And we just schmoozed about Star Trek. So why don't we just go to it? Let's listen to, what was it, about 20 minutes with Sonequa and Anthony?
Yeah, about 20 minutes with Sonequa and Anthony, and then about 40 or so with Matt.
All right, so let's go back in time a few hours ago. Here's what I sound like when I'm trying to be professional with Sonequa and Anthony. Hello, everyone. This is a special edition, Brian, Red Alert.
Black Alert.
Black Alert, special edition for Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. We are blessed, honored, and thrilled that we are here on backstage of After Trek. What goes on after Trek? After Trek is what happens.
Right. So this is right here in this room.
After Trek, we have Sonequa Martin-Green, and we have Anthony Rapp here, and it is an exciting, exciting, exciting time because, you know, this is kind of it for season one.
Yeah.
You can kind of stick a pin in it now. I was there in L.A. at the Arclight Theater where it was first unveiled.
Yeah.
That was in August, I guess?
September, yeah. Oh, yeah, August. I don't know. September,
no,
whatever.
September,
yeah.
It might have been August. It might have been September. I don't remember either. It was hot that day.
No, it was September.
Yeah.
All right. It was a hot September night.
Yes.
And now it's done. Now season one is done.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you both. I mean, sort of from 30,000 feet, you knew starting when you were shooting, oh my God, Star Trek, it's a big deal. We're going to do the first season. It's going to be a blur. Mm-hmm. But now you got a minute to breathe. Did it go the way you thought it was going to go?
Better, deeper, more meaningful, more special than I ever would have thought. Yeah. I mean, I also, by the way, never thought I would be on something like this. I always thought I would just be a fan of these kinds of things. So it's pretty crazy to be inside of it.
Yeah.
But once I got inside of it, to be surrounded by incredible human beings that I get to work with and who have such passion and care. And, you know, it's been interesting, too, to be on the inside and knowing we knew the long form storytelling we were engaged in. We knew that there were going to be these twists and turns. We knew we had these secrets. You know, and we were also recognizing that we were doing some things that were unusual in the history of Star Trek, and that we had to sort of keep asking the fans to keep faith with us. You know,
right.
And I'd like to believe we've proven our good faith now.
I would certainly say so. Yeah, I mean that's a good point. There was a little bit of like this is new, therefore I don't like this.
Right.
What's up with people like that?
Well, you know, the Trek audience is a very intellectual crowd, and their opinions come from their love and their loyalty to the franchise, right? And to the legacy, really. So, you know, we appreciate those opinions and we respect them, and we purpose to make them proud, but also grab a hold of people who, you know, didn't have opinions.
Right.
Either, you know,
oh, yeah, there
as well.
Are plenty of people that this is the first Star Trek they're ever watching. I've heard from them, and they don't know where to go next. I'm like, well, guess what? There's 50 years. So that's exciting.
Yeah, there you go.
So for a question for you, Sonequa, the same question for Anthony. You knew going into it was going to be a big deal,
yes,
big thing.
I did.
This is kind of the day where you can finally put a pin in season one. Did it go the way you thought it went? Or was it?
You know, I have to ditto what Anthony said in a lot of ways. You know, we knew that we knew the overall plan, right? In a sort of umbrella generalized kind of way, like, okay, so here's the umbrella of the storytelling or the tree. We didn't know all the branches that were going to come from it, essentially, or what all was going to, you know, sort of stem from the umbrella of the overall metaphors. Story. What'd you say?
Mixed metaphors, but it's okay.
You make umbrellas so, out of wood and
you make umbrellas. Sure.
And also in a rainstorm, the safest place to be is under a tree.
There
right?
you go. Oh, wait, no. So there you go. I mixed on purpose. Yeah. I was really moved by the courage. I was moved by the courage of the story because the story dreamed big and we did big things.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting for things to get quite as deep, quite as specific, quite as insightful. I was very happy with everything that we took on. And I'm really excited in our hyper-serialized story for these things to continue to unfold and for you to continue to see the residual effects
of
everything. Well,
what's interesting is that both of your characters went through some pretty heavy shit, man.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't say.
It was, and I would say that both of your most emotional scenes, from my point of view, not that you asked me which I thought was your most emotional scene, was opposite the same character, was opposite Ash. Mm-hmm. Yours was last week, episode 114, and yours was this week. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk to you individually, because it's interesting that you were kind of bouncing off the same guys. So, you know, you have a unique experience with the actress Shahzad Latif. Your character last week bumps into him outside the mess hall, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a scene that could have gone 100 different ways in the writing, and then from the writing, it still could have gone 100 different ways in the performance. You bump into the guy, and you don't punch him in the eye, but you don't embrace him either.
Yeah.
So I want to ask a little bit about that sequence, because it's, you know, when you saw those pages, there's a million different ways to play that.
First of all, I was very grateful that that moment existed and was brought to life, because, you know, in the sort of tumult of everything happening, there haven't been very many chances to see how Stamets is reckoning with it.
Right.
And it's understandable. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been time or space to do it. And also, you know, the moment I had with Culber in the Mycelium Network was kind of a kind of completion, but not fully, you know, so it's the loss is felt, but also not, you know what I mean? But then to be confronted with Ash, with his face.
You're also still on a goal when you're in the network.
Yeah, exactly.
You're still figuring out the clues and whatnot.
Yeah. And we're in the middle of the war. The stakes are so high. So, but when that was shown to me, I was really grateful that this existed in the first place. And then, I also went back and I asked Aaron and Gretchen, our showrunners, if there was a room to make it just a little more ambiguous and a little more edgy, you know, a little more unresolved, you know. And I was grateful that they also gave us the chance. It was just like a minor tweak, just to give it a little extra cut.
You mean like in a look or in a
no in the, line in, the in the language? And I don't you know, I don't remember exactly the language, but just to make it just a little more, a little less clean, because I don't think it's clean. I don't. How could it possibly be?
And that's what really jumped out at me when watching it was, you know, in a lesser TV show, this would all be tied up in a bow right now. Either they would hate each other, or they would be, come on, buddy, let's go grab a beer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think that's one of the things about our whole season is these shades of gray and the duality of situations. And I mean, I think Stamets is certainly smart enough to understand intellectually enough, you know, what's happened to this man. At the same time, personally, it still happened. So it's it's.
Oh yeah, when somebody wrongs you, you can always understand why. But it's a different thing to want to hang out with the guy afterwards. Exactly. So you had to share the same character.
Yes.
Poor Shahzad. When is he going to get to freak out at you? But.
But he did a little bit.
You've had a few times. Well, he tried to strangle you, for God's sakes. But. So in this episode, 115, when you're on Kronos and then the whole thing with the bombing and the vaping and the all kinds of shenanigans going on, and the Orions and Clint Howard, making his third appearance on Star Trek. You know, he was not just the little boy in TOS. He was in Deep Space Nine. Also,
he was.
This guy has played three different parts. Similar thing. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, last week you said, I look in your eyes, I see Voke's eyes.
Yeah.
Now you see Ash's eyes. You think there's going to be a big kiss. You're going to go take a weekend off sunset. Together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No.
No. No. It didn't happen. But what I loved about what we were given in the writing was, yes, it's not this easy thing. It's far from simple, and it's multi-layered and completely complex, because you have these two people who love each other, but they, you know, by the end, by 15, they both understand that their paths are separating at this point now. And, you know, I love how we were, you know, I have to give so much respect to Shahzad, as well as the writing, because I love the role reversal that we see a lot, that we've seen in all of season one with Burnham and Tyler, and, you know, where you see a lot of vulnerability coming from the man as well as the woman. And, you know,
which was a big deal.
Yes, the vow to protect each other is not just something the man did to the woman. The woman made the same vow, you know, back to him. And, you know, we really loved being able to delve into that. And, you know, mixing metaphors again, you know, we weren't anticipating that stemming from the umbrella. that we would be able to delve into that.
Yeah. Well, you know, for now he's gone. This show's going to go on for a long time, and there's going to be books and
from your mouth, from your mouth, from your mouth.
What I'm saying is, you and Tyler are going to get back together. I'm not asking. I'm telling. I know it's going to happen. You know, you've both mentioned the writing, and you have such great writers on the show. Many of them have been guests before, but I wanted to point something out. The reason why I have my phone here is not because I'm checking my stocks. there's a moment, you're not in the scene, but it was a scene where Mirror Universe, the Emperor, Mira Giorgio, who I have mixed feelings about, I'm sure we all do, and Tyler is explaining how you can get at the Klingons.
Right.
And hardcore fans, pardon me while I choke. I get so excited talking about Klingons that I... So Tyler starts explaining stuff to you. Oh, we're going to go into the... It's about the River Skrull and where Morlor was... What you need to know... He's smiling. What you need to know is that story that he's telling in brisk pace is actually taken from deep Klingon lore. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in... Episode 1 of Season 4 of Deep Space Nine, Worf sings a Klingon drinking song, which tells the story that Tyler is telling you. This is how hardcore your writers are. So if you like, and I know that you're a musician, so I know you want to listen to this song. This is in the original Klingon now. I'm going to play this 23 seconds, so bear with me. River Skrull, where Kalos slew Morlor and the river ran. So what happens week to week, and I'm sure you're all aware of this, is that there are the real hardcore fans like I who are, you know, living alone in solitude and silence and sadness, that when we watch the show, there's always at least one where we go, oh,
yeah,
that's the thing.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm honored, and it brings me great joy that I could play the Klingon drinking
Thank
song
you.
For you.
Thank
we
you.
We are honored to have been.
Thank you.
No, it's groovy stuff. It's groovy stuff. And there was a lot of, in this episode particular, episode 115, there's a lot of cannibalism discussed. Mm-hmm. There's eating Kelpians. Laurel reminds us that she ate your mother. Mm-hmm. How are you hanging out with her making deals? This is the Federation. You have to put aside your...
You do. Forgiveness. Forgiveness. This is the Federation. This is Starfleet.
Yeah.
And this is now, you know, this is Stamets. This is now Michael Burnham. This is, you know, that's what it's about. And you can't do it when it's convenient. you know, or you can't only do
is
it.
Is this
going to
affect
convenient.
The philosophy of your, you're raising a small child? I know. Is this going to mm-hmm. affect the, you got to say, be like Starfleet. Like when you want to take vengeance, you got to like, if Michael Burnham can forgive Laurel,
yes.
who ate her mother.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Probably didn't even put it with a nice sauce or anything. Just ate it raw.
Just
raw. They mentioned seasoning.
They did. They did mention
seasoning.
Yeah,
she said she requires
seasoning. She requires
seasoning.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I take that part back.
Yeah, well, it's not. It's about not taking shortcuts to the path of righteousness. It's about not breaking rules that, you know, that destroy moral authority. It's all those things that I say in that speech, right? It's, you know, I think about, you know, the pilot of Next Gen and what all the things that they said about Starfleet. And it really is an example of the best of ourselves and how we can work together and be united and be equal and all of that. So, yeah. It's really innovating, I think, to see people actually doing it when it's hard, when there's heartache involved.
Right.
Because that's when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, it's when it's earned. Yeah.
Yeah.
Starfleet and your character and your life, you live out in California.
No, I live in New York.
Oh, you do live in New York?
Yeah, I live in New York.
Well, all right. When it rains in New York, traffic dies. Try going on the subway when it's raining. You can't do it. Try getting a taxi. You can't do it. You've now done a full season of television where you have access to the Spore Drive.
Yeah.
How will your relationship with traffic change as a result of playing this character?
Well, yeah, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if we could blink places? Yes. 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 I feel
all right.
That would
well,
be.
You
yes.
know, well, you have to rise above, I guess.
Yes.
You know.
I mean, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to hang out with my cats when there's lots of traffic. So that's how I abide it.
You got a little bit of time until you start shooting again.
Yeah.
You got a little time. What are you going to be doing, you know, with your time off?
Well, speaking of my son, I'm just eating him up. and
like,
I guess
not,
speaking
not
of
like
cannibalism.
Laurel, not like
I know. I know. That's a funny thing to say right after we talk about cannibalism in the finale. But yes, you know, just spending so much time with my husband and with my son and, you know, laying the groundwork to ultimately teach what Starfleet represents, I suppose. All these things that we get from the stories we're blessed to tell, you know, you want to pass them down.
Right.
So yeah,
you get X amount
of
weeks off, you're locking the door, taking the phone off the hook and just staying.
Well, no, the phone doesn't go off the hook. I still got to answer the phone. And I still have lots of things, you know, to do, of course, but it's been amazing to have the family time.
Awesome.
Yeah, family time. I just got back from visiting my dad in Seattle. You know, things that are harder to do when we're stuck in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, it's not stuck. I don't mean stuck not in a bad way, but you know.
You're doing some gigs also.
Yeah, I'm doing some concerts here in the New York area, a couple of things like in Long Island and
Where in Long Island?
Stony Brook.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, middle of March, I think. It's hard to end of March? I don't remember. You know, they're in my calendar. I just go where they tell me. You know, got a couple little irons in the fire, like trying to get some projects, you know, but it's like stuff that I can afford to have time to sort of ponder and plant seeds for and cook a little bit. And, you know, hopefully it'll bear fruit down the road.
All right. But this March, if I want to see you in Stony Brook, I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, sure.
Go to the website and find it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there. It's going to be great.
Me
first
too.
First round.
Sure.
Cool. Well, listen, hey, your people here are letting me know politely that you do need to go and do other things. But I got one last question. Mm-hmm. We saw on After Trek, they did the count, and you've worn 15 different outfits on the show. What was your favorite?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to ask me what my favorite was. I really like the mirror.
That's the most Jean-Paul Gaultier cover of the Manhattan Transfers album extensions. It's pretty intense.
With the captain's plate.
Yeah. All right. That's
it
a good.
Really nice.
That is a good answer. You're the first Vulcan costume we see you in.
Yeah, that red thing was cool.
The cape. Yeah, that was beautiful at the graduation.
Yeah. I think you could rock that just day to day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everybody needs a cape. Right?
Anthony, how many costumes did you wear on the show?
I actually had more than most because I had the regular and then I had like the time when I was just in the shirt in the Spore Drive chamber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I had when I was like in my coma, I had like a jumpsuit kind of thing.
So you wore jammies too.
And then you
I had my
mirror,
pajamas and then
had
I had the mirror.
Jammies.
So I had quite a few too.
Yeah.
I love the pajamas. The pajamas are like
that was your favorite?
They're most comfortable.
Yeah.
They're like
they looked
so
it.
Comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, we were joking around, but all seriousness, we talked about this the last time. The scene with the two of you brushing your teeth is just iconic.
Yes. Yeah.
It was such the right way to introduce that whole relationship, and so natural and really just touching. And
it's been amazing to see how much Culber and Stamets were embraced too. I mean, you know, it's like, I think we all had hope that maybe that could be possible, but it was like immediate, it seemed, and like everywhere. And it's just only grown over time. And
yeah,
it's really, it's really meaningful to all of us involved in the show to know that that's the case.
Right.
It's really something. Yeah, no, it's
really cool. And our friend Sarah Gatos, who does all the Star Trek comics.
Yeah.
Has showed on Twitter. There's a special.
I know.
The Stamets.
My head is exploding.
It's coming out in a couple of weeks.
I know, I can't
and your meet cute with Culber is that's pretty much what the comic is.
I know. I can't believe it. But I just can't. I've been reading comic books since I was like 8 years old. And I had a huge collection. I used to be on tour with the show, and I'd go into every city's comic book store and like carry my comics around the country. To be in a comic is making my head explode. I can't believe it.
It's good stuff. Crazy.
God is so good. Look at you.
cool. Well, listen, congrats again. Have fun on your minor time off, and then get back to work, I guess, right?
Yes, for sure.
Happily.
More Star Trek to watch.
Here we come.
It's going to be great. Well, thanks again. And Brian, any last thoughts?
I got nothing.
Love it.
Great way to end it,
We're just excited.
I know, I love that.
We're excited.
Thank you guys for having us.
For being here.
Great to have you here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Okay, that was fun. Anthony Rapp was smiling at me when I was playing. You couldn't see because his head was turned. When I was playing Worf doing the Klingon song, he was really laughing. And it was... It was 80% laughing with, only 20% laughing at. But it was there. But it was done with love. It was like, what? You nerd. But done with love, because he is a nerd also. And I think Soniqua is too. I mean, she's a very well put together nerd, but I think she's got a little bit of...
Yeah, no, she brought up the pilot of Next Generation.
She did. She knows her stuff. She's wonderful. And she looked great. It was exciting to be with her. She is very warm. You know the expression lights up a room?
Yes, absolutely.
With her, forget about it. And I've met her once before, and it was the same thing. I mean, she is a star. She really is. No diss to Anthony Rapp. I'm just saying she comes in the room, and it's just boom. You know, it's just wow. A lot of energy. Fun, engaging, you want to like her, and she gives it all back. There was no surprise that she is a major Hollywood television film star.
I'm thinking back to, we obviously took pictures with them after the recording.
Yeah.
And I sent it to my wife immediately, and her response was, F you. She was very jealous.
Yeah, no, she's a sweetheart. So I'm excited that we got a chance to meet her. So, yeah, no, but, you know, it's funny. Anthony Rapp was talking about how, well, you just heard it because we just played it, but when he was schmoozing about comic books, that was legit, you know? And he's the type of guy that was a collector, and I bet you I should have told him about the special deal from Eagle Moss.
Yes.
He's the type of guy that I think would like to know about the officially authorized by CBS official Star Trek Starships collection available only from Eagle Moss, the ultimate collection of vessels from across the Star Trek universe, from the original series to Star Trek Beyond and beyond. Each model is cast in a specially formulated metallic resin and hand-painted with references to the original CG models used in production and, where they exist, photos of the original studio models. And each ship comes with a display base, plus a collector's magazine featuring behind-the-scenes info, original design sketches, and a breakdown of the technology on board. You can start your collection today with the USS Enterprise NCC-1701D for only $4.95 with shipping. And new models ship twice monthly and delivered directly to your door. You can cancel your subscription at any time, but you never will, because you're going to want more and more and more. And you, for more information and to order, you go to st-starships.com/engage. ST-or ST-, depending on how you roll. ST-starships.com/engage. These are great. I have some Eagle Moss ships. Don't have the whole collection because it's just, it was, you know, for me, I only wanted a few, but I've got a few great ones. They're really nice, beautiful details. They fit right there on your desk, and they come with a really nice glossy dossier on each ship. And, you know, starts with the Enterprise D and then goes deep. We're talking shuttles, weird runabouts, a ship that's only seen for 2 seconds in one episode. Eagle Moss collection is the best. You know who else would like Eagle Moss?
I was going to say this, our next guest.
Our next guest, Matt Myra, it was made for him.
Absolutely.
He probably has Eagle Moss. What you're going to hear in the next interview is Matt Myra's love for Star Trek tech. When he was talking about the tech of the Enterprise Discovery version.
I was just nodding.
What are we going to call that? Because there's the Enterprise Refit, the Enterprise A, the Enterprise D, the Enterprise E. Then there's the Enterprise Remastered from the original series Blu-rays. Thank you, Okudas. What are we going to call? Then there's the Kelvin Enterprise.
That's a good question.
This is, and you can't call it Enterprise D for Discovery because that's the Enterprise D. A lot of people have no idea what I'm babbling about, but a lot of people do.
No, it's a good question. Yeah. It's an absolutely good, great question. There's so many Enterprises.
There's now.
How do you distinguish this model? Because you know that Eagle Pike. Moss will.
It's Pike Enterprise.
But there are.
Enterprise P for Pike. Well, you know what? That's a question we should have brought up with Matt, and we're going to have to bring it up eventually when we get one of the producers of Discovery back on the show. Ted Sullivan, my number is always open to you. Give me a call. Let me know what we're calling the ship. All right, let's get to it then. Going back in time, just a few short hours ago, we sat with Matt Myra on the 7th floor. What? 7th floor?
Something like that.
Yeah, 7th floor, and he had chicken wings, and we didn't, but we still talked to him, and that conversation went like this. All right, now we're recording?
Yes, now we're recording.
3, 2, 1. Oh!
We were recording the whole time. He just wrote down the time code to cut from.
Yeah, Metacod.
And we're back.
You know the drill.
Soniqua and Anthony left, and now we have the real talent in the room.
Oh, that is bullshit. Can I swear on the Star Trek podcast,
absolutely,
or am I making him write down more
absolutely
time codes to bleep?
We swear when necessary. We swear only to advance the plot.
Yes.
We never swear for no reason.
Sure, sure. Sometimes we swear just for funsies, and you know, some people.
What was the first swear? One time a listener did
double dumbass on you. I think was the first one.
No, a listener did complain
about us cursing.
Yeah, I got a note that said, you know, you should really write explicit on there. And like, I'll did I swear? That. So I went back and listened to the whole thing, and I did say something like, "Ah, that's a bunch of shit." You know, like I said, "That's bullshit" or something.
But probably one ever.
Some people are very sensitive. Matt Myra, thank you for joining us on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Jordan, thank you for allowing me to officially be on the official Star Trek podcast.
A lot of fish in the room.
I'm glad that we're all here talking about CBS, CBS All Access, Star Trek Discovery. I don't know. Whatever you want to talk
These
about.
Are shows that we all like. And this is now season one is done. You're officially off. You're off the clock now.
I am officially off the clock.
You, just to give a little background.
I am texting Gretchen Berg right now, but yes, I'm still off the clock.
Tell Gretchen, tell her that we love
her. I will.
Tell her we want her on the show.
I will.
On Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
She'll never do it. She doesn't even listen to podcasts anymore out of fear that they'll say something about Discovery that will not be joyous.
We, as a general rule.
And as a rule of thumb for me, I also never listen to podcasts that talk about things that I might be involved with.
Because,
quite frankly,
you don't need the headache.
I don't need to. I'm not listening to the Gold Nerds. the Goldbergs podcast. No. I'm not going to listen to that. No. What if they accidentally say, you know, I didn't like that episode that Matt Myra wrote?
Well, you know,
I'd be like, you sons of bitches.
It's true. When you put something out into the world, you have to expect that there will be people who won't like it. You don't have to search out those opinions. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody comes to you with like, oh, I liked what you did. You're like, great, that's terrific. If somebody comes up and says, oh, what you did was shit, like nobody would do that, right? Well, some yes. crazy people will. So by the same token, you don't have to sniff around for negative feedback.
Sure.
If there's positive feedback, somebody might tell you, oh, did you read the thing that somebody wrote and blah, blah, blah. Then you go, all right, I'll take a look. You know, great. But, you know, as a general rule, you can leave it alone.
Yeah.
But sometimes they come at you. And like I said, I did receive a note from somebody who was very upset that we use a swear word.
You know, I've been there. That's why I tag every podcast I do with the explicit tag, so yeah. that in iTunes you're prepared for the occasional swear about.
Right. So let me ask you a little bit about, you are the host of After Trek.
Yes.
You've done 12 episodes. No, 14.
We've done 14, yeah, because we did two for the pilot because it was a two-parter.
Right.
That aired the same night.
So what is your Star Trek origin story? How did you cross paths?
You know, it's hard to remember my life without Star Trek. My mother was a big fan of the original series, and because they were in reruns constantly in the 80s, after school usually, we just sort of grew up in a house that always had Star Trek on. I remember, I mean, that was later during the 25th anniversary, the VHS clamshells that started to come out. Remember the TOS clamshells mm-hmm. that came out? We had those. We had my mother was a big fan of QVC, used to do these Star Trek episodes, you know, where they would shill. So like Shatner would be out there shilling for something. It could be ranging from anything from communicator prop replica to buy a Tribble for $13.99.
And you get a tape of T.J. Hooker on the side, sure, you know, as an extra. Sure. Yeah.
And my mom would I used to love watching those. But my mom was a big QVC-er too, so I remember those very specifically from my childhood. But yeah, when the original series was in reruns, I was watching it. When TNG came out, I have memories of my childhood. And when TNG came out, I was only 5. So, but I do have vivid memories of my older sister, Julie, being a big TOS fan, being angry about the Next Gen coming out.
Really?
Yes, being like, wow. It's not Star Trek if Kirk and Spock and McCoy aren't there. Right.
Well, she's right. It's all been a sham since...
Sure, it's all right. been a sham. And my mother was more of like, oh, this will be interesting. Let's see how it is. And she loved it. And I had to warm up to it too, because I was more like taking the side of my sister.
Well, also as a young, like Encounter at Farpoint is not exactly action packed for a kid.
Yeah, it's not a big touchstone episode. No. It is in the sense that like it brought TNG back or Star Trek back to television.
Right. But nobody talks about Groppler Zorn that much. Right. You know, it's not like he's,
so that was my sort of very early childhood. And then, you know, my mother would take us to Star Trek conventions. As a kid, I would go to all the Star Trek conventions that were in Boston at the Heinz Convention Center. We would go and, you know, I saw everybody. I saw Shatner, Nimoy, Kelly, Kane. I've seen everybody from the original series. I've seen everybody from TNG. I have, you know, so, and that was the prime time.
Yeah,
the 25th anniversary of Star Trek, that was like the heyday golden era of convention going and of just being a fan and being able to buy merch.
Like, yeah.
They were making so much merch.
And that was just when that led right into the other golden era, which is you have TNG movies.
Yes.
DS9 thick in the...
Yep.
Dominion War arc mm-hmm. and Voyager starting.
Right.
And you had all these three things happening at once. Yeah. And there's like, you swing a cat and you get some Star Trek.
Yeah, there's all of them. I really, I did. And I...
Now, Star Trek was not always cool like it is now.
No, I would... I have a moment I remember very vividly from my high school days. My friend was over. my friend Crystal was over, and we were in my room, and she opened my closet. And in my closet, on the other side of my closet door, I had a Generations poster.
Oof.
Which was the, which was McCoy, I mean, not McCoy, which was Picard and Kirk separated by the Delta. You know,
right.
That
and
one?
It was like a purplish yeah, blue. Yeah, yeah.
I had that one in my thing. And she's like, "You like Star Trek?" And I was like, "I do." She's like, "I do too." I was like, "Awesome."
Oh, there you go. I thought Chris was like, "We're not going to prom after all," you know.
And then I thought to myself, I was like, "Oh, okay, I shouldn't really keep this part of me contained. I can let it go." And yeah, I mean,
yeah, there was a time. I'm a smidge older than you, so I remember when TNG started. I was really into it.
Yeah.
But the only other kid in my school that was out as a Star Trek fan was like the dork of all dorks. I mean, he was just, and not even like a cool kid. He was just a mess. So I didn't really want to associate with him. So I kept it to myself. But then when the episode Conspiracy aired,
sure,
the first one where heads exploded,
yeah.
Then people were like, "Do you see that show? Star Trek's actually kind of cool." And it was like, "Oh, all right, these other kids like it." I'm like, I can now unleash my fandom, be like, "I've been watching since the encounter at Farpoint, and
they
got to
bring those conspiracy worms back." I mean, there's really no, they're out there, you know, they're out there somewhere.
Yeah,
set it up to like, "We're going to touch this again." Maurice Hurley's like, "We're going to do this. There's going to be so many worms." So that's my Maurice Hurley impression, if anyone cares.
Not too bad, not too shabby.
So in sixth grade, actually, I got invited to a girl's birthday party for the first time. Not birthday party, a girl's Halloween party for the first time in sixth grade. And what I dressed as Scotty. That's what I wore. It was a red sweater. I made a Delta out of tin foil. It was really a time.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
That's
so I have been, in it, and I am cool. One of you listeners. I'm one of you, Jordan. I'm an obsessive Star Trek fan.
That's awesome.
To the point, like, my real obsession with Star Trek, like, the thing that I get nerdy about with Trek has always been how the ship works. How fast can it go? What is impulse? What is the maximum warp? How much deuterium do we need for a journey? Where, you know, that tank takes so much of the star drive section up. Like, people don't realize how big that deuterium tank is.
It's funny because impulse is something that has, I mean, I would imagine that full impulse power is still what compared to warp one. Because warp one is the speed of light.
Yes. Well, warp one is theoretically the speed of light. Now, there's so many. They've changed the warp. They've changed the warp scale many times.
Right, because warp 10 is being everywhere at once.
Yes,
right?
Warp 10 is infinite, of course, but legendarily achieved by Paris on a Delta Flyer. We all get that. We have all been there.
Right.
Now, when you're dealing with a transwarp drive like the Excelsior had before Scotty took a bolt out of it and made it not work forever, and they just did away with transwarp travel.
Right.
It is sub impulse, full impulse. Isn't it like 0.95 the speed of light? I think. I feel like full impulse is much faster.
Much faster than we realize.
Than we realize it is. Like, so like when they're going out of space dock at a quarter impulse, you're like,
it's still pretty fast.
Still pretty fast, yeah.
Out of control. Guys.
Well, I believe when they do quarter impulse, it's like we're leaving space dock and there's Pluto. Like they're gone
like
that.
Yeah. So I mean it's a little inconsistent throughout the writing.
Well, I mean, look, I spoke to Michael and Denise Okuda about this question, and they refused to give an answer. When you beam, do you die?
Yes, I think you do. I've always thought that.
Yeah.
I've always thought that your pattern, the energy required to actually do a beam would be immense. And the amount of storage you need, I don't care how many isolinear chips you have.
Right.
You are needing to store an entire human body, your every molecule, every placement of that molecule in order to restore.
And you're going to need redundancy in case you screw up.
But I have always, you know, ever since The Prestige came out, that's how I think it works.
I was
going to
say that as soon as you finished talking.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it works.
Well, in
my mind.
Not just your mind. If you read James Blish's Spock Must Die from 1971, he posits the Prestige theory that when you go through, you are spat out a new person, and the Okudas, they neither confirm nor deny. You know, I mean,
had they seen The Prestige?
Yeah, yeah. They knew exactly what I was talking about, but, okay, you know, they didn't want to get into it.
It's a lovely realization of what
No, it's good. I mean, I think the best thing about The Prestige is that it has touch points with Star Trek. And it's beaming. That's its really purpose. But if that is the case, no wonder Dr. McCoy doesn't want to get in the goddamn...
he never... I always respected him for that. Like, I wouldn't want my atoms scattered across the galaxy.
No,
either.
Take a shuttle. Who's in a rush?
Exactly it. He takes a shuttle in Farpoint, and everyone's like, yeah, that's McCoy.
You know, it's the it's the people that are rich enough to take their time. It's like people who go from New York to L.A. on the train because they can. They're like, they'll wait for me. Yeah, I'm not taking...
No, that would never work for me.
JetBlue. You've been doing a lot of traveling because of this show.
Back and forth every weekend.
You do a lot of that.
This is weekend 14 of my travels about the country.
What do you do on the plane every week?
When depends on which flight it is. So on the flight out, it's usually a red eye, so I will try my best to sleep.
Mm.
The flight back used to be the earliest flight possible, where I would get picked up at 4:15 in the morning and taken to the airport on Monday. In that case, I would not sleep all night. I would,
oh, you just stay
and
up.
Then I would do the sleeping on the plane, and then I would go to work at the Goldbergs.
So Sunday nights, the previous 15 weeks or 14 weeks, you've been up all night in New York. What do you do? Do you like? Do you go like out raging, or do you just go to like delis all night?
You know where what do I you do a lot? Well, stay in and read. We used to shoot After Trek much
later.
We used to do it live.
Yeah.
Now we do it live to tape for many reasons, but the main reason is that it allows us to ingest it into CBS All Access's play system so that you can watch it immediately after Discovery. Because before, if you weren't watching the feed, you would not be able to jump in and start watching it. So what we've done is we've adjusted our start time so that you guys at home can watch it immediately.
We, the end user, thank you.
Yes. So that's a little peek behind the curtain. But I would generally, on those days, we wouldn't get out of here till 10, 10:30. And then I would either walk up the street to a bar at Houston, and I would drink like a Guinness and some water, and then I'd go back and forth. Or I would walk the city. I'm a big believer in walking in New York.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it, love it, love it, love it. I don't like when they have cars for me. Like, they would, depending on what hotel I was at, they would send a car, and I would, many times I'd have them cancel the car. I'm just going to walk. It's silly. I love it. I love walking. I love walking uptown, downtown. I'll go from
this is a
Soho.
This is someone from LA talking. Because in LA, you can't walk anywhere.
You can't walk
You get eaten by a coyote
you
if you walk
You can't walk anywhere. It's ridiculous. But my genuine, like, I come to New York, I can eat like shit. I'm sorry, I'm saying it again. I can eat like crap. I can eat like 45 slices of pizza and I'll still lose weight in New York because I'm literally moving for the first time.
Wow.
It's crazy.
You know, I've thought about this. I am not the most svelte of gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
I often wonder what I would look like if I didn't live in New York and have to walk places.
You don't want that thought in your head.
No.
No, 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 no.
No, no. It would be... we saw the tardigrade. I think it would be something similar to that.
I agree. I would... if I... if I didn't get these walks in, it would be a terrible, terrible time.
Episode 115, which we just watched, did you know Clint Howard was going to be in it beforehand?
No.
You watched the show, like you get to see it like a little bit before the general public.
I honestly could have watched everything months ago. I could have seen all 15.
No.
I could have.
But
I chose to watch it every week. And this episode was the one I watched closest to the release because I was so busy at work that I didn't have time to watch it until yesterday in my hotel. So I watched it on Saturday, and I did not know Clint Howard was going to be it. I just honestly was just like, what are they going to do with this Georgiou situation they've created for themselves?
Yeah. I kind of like that she's out there. I mean, this is airing after, so we can spoil away. This is... you know, they reach something of an understanding, and now she's a foe in our universe.
Yes,
that will appear maybe a season and a half from now.
Right.
You know, that's my guess is that we're not going to see her for a while, and something's going to happen. She's not a good person,
right?
So she's going to get into trouble.
She's the Terran Emperor. I don't understand like the whole concept of Starfleet installing her on the bridge of the Discovery was bananas to me. It was crazy pants.
It was the act of very desperate people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's surprising. And Sarek immediately owned up to it and said, I don't know. He was like, it was like he had a hangover. He was like, I don't know what happened last night. Yeah. You know, it was like, we went a little nuts. And yeah, they went over the line.
Oh, I think that it was good. They sort of wrote themselves to a place where they bring it back to Starfleet and the Federation ideals. And that's, you know, for me, that's always been sort of the integral part of a Star Trek series, is that sort of betterment of humanity and that sort of quest for knowledge. And that, you know, I think it was showcased best by Picard, as far as like, you know, who could we punch a bunch of Starfleet material into a computer and come out with a captain? It would be Picard.
Sure. Because, yeah.
You know, he at the end of the day was just, he's an explorer who's a diplomat and who wants to do his thing on a starship. And for me, I felt like this season of Discovery, they started it in a very dark place. They started in a world where we're at war with the Klingons, or in a universe where we're at war with the Klingons, and it's dealing with that and maintaining your humanity, which I think they have showcased beautifully with Burnham's character.
Yeah, no, there are some really nice echoes in the last episode with the first episode, mm-hmm. Which was discussed on your show, so we don't have to go over them mm-hmm. again, but they really are... They mirror, if you will, mm-hmm. one another nicely, and it's pretty cool. The big ending is interesting, with the Enterprise showing up. I think fans are going to have heart attacks about that, and I think there will be some dissonance.
Yes, but I don't know if it's going to be a good heart attack or a bad heart attack. It's going to be it's a difficult thing for people to process, I think.
Yeah,
it'll be
because
very interesting.
The ship, I mean, look, there are some people whose attitudes towards Star Trek mirror the Thermians from Galaxy Quest. Like, they really do think of it as historical tapes.
Yeah.
And they have yet to get over the fact that the Klingons on this show look different than the other Klingons. And I get it. I mean,
I totally get it too.
There's a part, like, there but for the grace of K, let's go I. I mean, I understand that mindset, and I'm horrified that I could be one of them, but I get it. But so, yeah, the ship looks a little different. I mean, we only saw it for a second, but I don't know. Now, what's interesting is...
Well, let's talk. I mean, the star drive, the hull of the ship, the star drive looks a little built up. It's sort of echoing the Constitution-class refit from the motion picture, right? But there is a dish. There's a satellite dish on the front end of it, right? So you got your deflector array where it should be.
Yeah.
Now, the nacelles, I think the nacelles look... I've spent a lot of time staring at this thing in the last day and a half, in case you're wondering. The nacelles, they look very, very Matt Jeffersy. It's really the design of this ship. I think it's a beautiful marriage of the aesthetic that Discovery has made with the original series, while respecting the original series. Those of you that were worried that the Constitution class would have divots in the saucer section like it does in the diagram for the Defiant, rest well. It does not. Those of you that were thinking it wouldn't have the dish at the front, congratulations, you have yourself a dish. Those of you that have always thought the pylons for the warp nacelles always looked a little fragile, you guys should be happy too, because they're built up a little bit more like the A.
Now, there are also a little bit, there's more blue.
Like a little blue seen through there, yeah. Now, again, we don't know. This could yet be another refit for the Constitution class that happens between the time we see it in Discovery and the time we see it in the cage.
Right. That's a good point.
You know, they could refit that ship again. They could go, you know what, these nacelles are better if we enclose the entire nacelle and just expose the buzzard collector, we're going to be okay. It's going to go better. So if they do that... There's so many ways they can write themselves out.
You can retcon almost anything in your head.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm delighted to do it. I think that the registry number of 1031 for Discovery, I think that's fine. I think what happened, here's my retconning of that, if anyone cares.
Yeah, bring it on.
When they went to war with the Klingons, they decided to build everything that was sitting in space dock. Everything that was in the Utopia Planitia, that was a frame that maybe they didn't complete. For various reasons, they were like, we have to build everything. And I think that the Discovery was in a weird place where it had started to be built and was assigned a registry number, but it was not launched. So they finished it up and launched it for the Klingon War. That's why it has a 1031 instead of a 1701. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're welcome, okay. Everybody. Slow your roll. If you need me to retcon anything, I'll be here.
I just think the numbers don't. Like, I think the numbers are sometimes you go to the deli,
yeah,
and you take a number.
Sure.
And you're 86, and the guy after you is 14.
Yeah.
Like, it just is because.
That makes sense, too. But, you know, my nerd brain is always.
Well,
just
my pastrami brain is on the deli.
Like, the reason that I don't think of Star Trek V as canon is not because of Cybok. It's because of the fact that when they're in the turbo lift, there's 80-some-odd decks that are clearly, it's clearly written behind them, 82. And we all know. Constitution class does not have that many.
That's just too many. That's just too many. Well, listen, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time because it is now officially you're off the clock, as I said. But
I'm talking about Star Trek, so I don't care. I'm happy to talk.
What you need to do now, because we have a while until we're going to be seeing season two. We don't know the exact dates, but it's going to be many months.
Yeah, yeah.
There are two prequel novels that are out. One I've read, mm-hmm. and Brian's read. One we just got because it just came out a couple days ago. And the first one, which is called Desperate Hours, mm-hmm. is awesome. And it's set a year before the first episode of Discovery.
Right.
And there's a lot of Spock and Burnham in it.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, if you're kind of itching, like, what the F is going to happen when...
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine
By the
that
way, this whole thing of Michael being a sibling of Spock,
yeah.
just as a Star Trek fan, it has never bothered me.
No, and it's awesome.
It hasn't bothered me for the very simple reason that this happens with Spock. He has siblings he does not mention. He did it in Five, and quite frankly, he's going to do it again.
Right. Well, but not just that. What you'll see is they didn't really grow up together. Mm-hmm. In Desperate Hours, they lay it out. Yeah. They are they certainly have the same parents. I mean, biological in the case of Spock. But Spock was a good 10 years younger, and Burnham was
than
away.
Michael.
Yeah, Burnham. Okay. Michael Burnham is older, and she was at school. and then they separate, and then they both go their own separate ways. And the most bonding they do is in the book that you should read, and it's available.
Great.
You know, Amazon.com.
Do you guys have a sponsor? Is there a Kindle code I could use? Is there
any no, I'm not even shilling right now.
If you guys have any sort of sponsorships, let me know. I'd be
you know,
happy
if
to
you
buy
if
it.
You if you have yet to get a copy of this book,
I have yet to.
I know some people at CBS that could probably get
a
copy.
I would just like for once CBS to like throw me a bone.
Throw you a bone.
Just give me something.
It's also like $8.99.
Oh, this is too much. This is too much. I'll honestly probably listen to the audio version.
Oh, there is an audio version.
I have a lot of time in
the
car flying. In Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And you don't listen to podcasts because they may talk about you.
I don't listen to podcasts because, quite frankly, I do enough.
Since I've been working in podcasts for about 2.5 years now, and my podcast consumption outside of the ones I work on is like dropped significantly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard.
You get tired of it.
Yeah.
And I never re-listen to anything that I do just because like, I'm like, I was there. I don't need, I heard it.
Right.
But if anyone out there cares to find more podcasts, just punch my name into your old machine.
Oh, yeah.
It'll come out.
In your Stitchers, in your Spotify's, and iTunes.
If you want one where I'm showing another comedy writer of the Goldbergs what Star Trek The Next Generation was like, that exists too, episode by episode.
That is a very entertaining show.
It's a ridiculous program.
It's very entertaining. And it's called the...
It's called Star Trek The Next Conversation.
Right.
So
I have heard it is very
entertaining. We've been on break because I've been bouncing back and forth to New York, and now we're going to be back.
So what are you watching when you're not watching Star Trek? What's exciting you sci-fi wise? Blade Runner 2049, did you like it?
Beautiful movie.
Yeah.
It looked gorgeous. The plot was fine. Sci-fi wise, it's hard to... I'm happy to discuss this with anybody who cares to find me out on the street, but I enjoyed The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Did people, is that like a thing?
Are you not on the internet? Because there's a whole cadre of people who want to burn that movie at the stake.
My understanding is I was under the impression that the only people who did not like The Last Jedi were like Gamergate types that hate women.
Feels like
that. Oh, yeah, that was a terrible
thing. But there's also like a lot of people that are like, well, you did, that's not my Luke. I'm just like, ugh.
The old Luke was boring.
Yeah.
He was a kid. We haven't seen him in a long time.
Who knows what he was doing?
Yeah, he was in a cave with drinking space milk from a big lizard.
What if he discovered the secret to holodecking?
Let me tell you something.
I love the people, by the way, that are upset about there's a contingency of people, and come at me, bros, find me. I will talk to you about it. That are upset about the way that they can communicate on the Discovery with projections
right.
of Admiral Cornwell, for instance.
Hollow communicators.
Which I'm like, that's your beef. You're like you're like so mad that they didn't think of this until the Defiant got one.
Yeah.
That you're like, and I'm also like, well, look, it's a shitty projection. It's not a great projection.
It does twitch out a lot.
There's a lot of twitching out.
Yeah.
And on the Defiant, it's clearly a person standing on the set. Which it is in Discovery 2, but like they refined it and they got it to the point that it's on the Defiant. It seems like Discovery has a lot of advanced tech on it.
Yes, it does. I like that on the Shenzhou, Giorgio can say privacy and her blinds click down.
Yes.
That was nice. They frosted out. The glass frosts out.
I love little things like that. And what I hope for in the next season of Discovery is just as a young man who always wanted to be an engineer on board a starship, I hope we see some more engineering. I want to see those warp cores.
We have yet to meet the chief engineer.
That is correct.
Well, and there's a lot of room for new cast members at this point. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little annoyed that they're getting a new captain. I thought Saru was going to be the captain.
Saru was such a good captain. I don't understand why they made that decision, but...
I was surprised.
You know, maybe it's a red herring, and they're just saying it, and then they'll get sidetracked in this mission, and Saru's the captain.
Yeah, they may not even get to Vulcan for 6 episodes with their new Michigas.
Very true.
And I'm kind of crossing my fingers for that, honestly.
We got to bail Pike out of some mess.
I would like for Saru to be the captain. I think that we should meet the chief engineer, and we should meet the chief medical officer also, which Culber never was.
Correct.
Culber was Doctor Number 3.
Correct.
So we have two big opportunities.
And I've always known that. And that's always been a little thing of like, why?
Where's Bones?
Why are we following these cast members who are all fantastic? Give me my chiefs of staffs.
Well, that's always been, I think probably goes back to Brian Fuller.
Oh, of course.
Because he, you know, by episode 15, we know the bridge crew, Detmer, and the others. But we don't really hang out with them, and that's a twist, you know.
And a big thank you to Ted Sullivan this year for giving us a captain's log from Saru.
Yeah, it was so great. Saru is a lot of fun.
13, I will say, episode 13 of Discovery was my favorite episode of Star Trek in a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, I'm tied between that and the time loop episode.
Yeah.
Time loop episode was just so much fun.
You know, I can go for Harry Mudd, but I got to be honest. He was so iconically played in the original series.
Yes.
It felt weird to bring in another iconic actor.
I mean, look, we're going to have to deal with that. Unless episode 1 of season 2 is a radio from Pike saying, oh, we're okay, and they zoom away, we're going to be seeing ostensibly... Pike, number 1, also known as Commander Una, the little redhead. I forget her name. She's adorable.
Yes, nice bob cut there.
And we're going to be seeing not just Spock, but old Spock.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. I'm going to spoil a little bit.
Smiley Spock.
Angry Spock, the one who shouts, the women!
That's true.
here's the dig. I'm going to spoil the book a little bit that I want you to read.
Book spoil.
Because... the book retcons why Cage Spock is different from real Spock. Something happens, and not just like he has an interesting day. Like something changes in Spock that changes him from yells the women, you know, and he's shouting all the time in the cage to like normal Spock. So
listen, I just want to say, as a writer of television, sometimes you do things. And then you go and you watch it, and it airs, and you live with it for a second. And then you go like, you know what? I think we can do a little bit better.
Sure.
And then you do it. And the beauty of not writing science fiction is that I don't have to have people write novels retconning my creative decision for my property.
No. It's only a few things have these troubles. So, what, you know, are they going to cast a different Spock? I mean,
They're going to have to, yeah. I think so. I think they're going to have to. There's no way we don't. As far as I can tell, the way they're setting this up,
yeah.
I think we're going to have to we're going to have to see Spock. We're going to have to see
This is your conjecture.
The
this
uniforms.
Is all, this is all not conjecture. Official. You were
I
not
I have no official information. Right. I'm not involved in the writing process of Discovery.
You know what they should do?
What should they do?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to throw it all down. And we talked about this a little bit last week. Right. You know who they should get to play the new Spock?
Who?
Should get Zachary Quinto. I'm going to tell you why. I can tell you why.
And I can legally tell you why they cannot do that. But
it's a legal thing?
It is a legal thing. The Star Trek, those of you listening to the official Star Trek podcast, I will now inform you of some Star Trek legalities that happened. The separation of Paramount and Viacom, CBS and Viacom, CBS and Paramount, is a line that is drawn down the sand. This may change because there are talks
we've,
of
we've talked about
everything.
That.
But the movie universe and the TV universe are different universes altogether with different actors, different creative teams, et cetera, et cetera. The only holdover we have is Kurtzman, and he could not hire the lawyers needed to get Zachary Quinto on
they
board.
They hire Quackery Zinto is what it is. Here's why I'm suggesting it. And I have nothing but admiration and respect for Zachary Quinto, but every other member of the Kelvin timeline is like, they're kind of out of Trek now. Mm-hmm. Chris Pine's, you know, he's got a lot going on. Everybody else has got a lot going on. Quinto just announced that he's rebooting In Search Of. Did you know this?
That's insanity.
He's doing this. This was in the trades. I mean, for History Channel,
He's not making it up.
Which is crazy, right? Because everybody else is like, yes, I do Star Trek, but my name is Chris Pine, and I'm in Wonder Woman. Yeah. I'm in A Wrinkle in Time. My name is John Cho. I do independent films that play at Sundance. Quinto is like... Quinto does other things. He's a producer. He produces a lot of independent films. Yeah. You know, he's got a life outside of Trek, but he's kind of just like, fuck it. I'm Spock 2.0. Let's just lean into it.
Listen, if he reboots and directs Three Men and a Baby, I'm gonna lose my mind.
All right, so they're going to have to recast Spock. I mean, Quinto
is
too
old
to
play. I like
the
Quinto idea because he, you know, he has the...
Might as well do it.
He has the blessing of the family and of Leonard Nimoy.
And he might as well. Like if they have to bring back Spock, he's right there. He's a little too old.
It's having to catch lightning in a bottle three times, which is a very difficult thing. So their casting people have a lot cut out.
Right,
if they choose to show Spock...
They might screw up.
Their casting
And we know that Quinto is reliable.
Yeah,
but it's a legal thing.
Because it's just the Paramount.
He would have to do it under cover of night.
You can figure that out by looking at your Twitter and checking out the fact that there is an @StarTrekCBS and an @StarTrek.
Yeah, it's a little
confusing.
The Star Trek family is big and bold, and at the end of the day, everyone loves each other.
Yes, that's what's important.
We all work together, strive
to make humanity better.
Yeah, but there is it would be kind of funny. I mean. Recasting Pike, recasting Majel Barrett's role, that's going to be tough too, but not as tough as making a third Spock.
Well, and I'll say why that is. Pike, we only saw for two episodes, right?
Right.
And Majel's character as the first officer is someone we saw for one episode.
Right.
So, you know, she's back, but she's Nurse Chapel.
Right.
Not playing the same character. So, you know, those two roles are not... as iconic as someone we've seen for three seasons, nine movies. It's crazy. I'm saying nine because there's a photo of him in Into Darkness.
And Leonard Nimoy as Spock is, I say unto you, I'm going to throw down.
Yeah.
20th century icons of entertainment.
Yes.
Charlie Chaplin as the Tramp.
Uh-huh.
Leonard Nimoy as Spock. What else is there?
The Beatles?
Yeah, there's music.
Right. Sure,
but yeah,
sure.
The Beatles.
Oh, and you said entertainment.
64 Beatles at Ed Sullivan with the bowl cut.
Yeah.
What else?
Beatles.
What else is that big? Man with No Name, Clint Eastwood, maybe. But that's second tier.
Yeah.
No offense to Clint.
Let me think on that for a second.
What else? Nixon doing this?
Yeah, Darth Vader.
Fuck that guy.
I'm just saying. There's a lot of icons.
Darth
out there.
Vader's annoying because you know what? Darth Vader for me. Is annoying because the prequels, because now he's like a good guy, kind of. He hates sand. I mean, so it makes it complicated.
Sean Connery is James Bond.
No, because there's Roger Moore and there's the other guys. It dilutes it. But by that
does
logic,
it?
Quinto would dilute Spock.
And here's
also.
The idea, too. You know, look at it like this. I was
not 20th century.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
There's a great, I'll plug it right now because I love it. There's a great YouTube channel guy does called Junkball Media. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they do a lot of, they cover a lot of Star Trek stuff. He like does these things called therapy. And what he does is he goes through each ship. So like the Enterprise D, he has like a 30-minute like breakdown of all of it. Like when it was built, how many decks, my favorite kind of thing. But he tweeted the other day that he looks at the Star Trek universe now as the James Bond universe. And like any director who comes in is going to put their own spin on it. And yeah. And you just have to like, you love it. And I still, you know, I love all of James Bond.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Felix Leiter, one, I forget which movie, Felix Leiter was black in one movie and then he was white again.
Jeffrey Wright. Played by Jeffrey Wright. He's in Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale.
But before that, there was a black Felix Leiter. No. Oh, 100% there was.
Oh, unless you're thinking of Never Say Never Again.
It was No. It was.
Are you thinking of Quarrel?
No, I think it was one of the Roger Moore ones.
Okay. I do a podcast called James Bonding, which is the it's an unofficial, but it's a James Bond podcast, and I can run through all of your Felix Leiters.
Right, I feel like one of them was a
Jack
black
Lord
man.
Played the first Felix Leiter in Dr. No, and he had some lady sunglasses on.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
The only person to repeat Felix Leiter besides Jeffrey Wright was the guy that did it in Live and Let Die and License to Kill.
Okay.
Which is like...
Maybe it was Never Say Never Again? Does that not count?
It could have been Never Say Never Again because that does not count and you may be 100% correct. And because that is non-canonical bonding,
oh, man.
I'm like, meh.
Should I Google
this? I'll see it once. Go ahead, yeah.
Real quick?
I can guarantee you.
Should I ask Siri or should I type it in?
Siri, who played Felix Leiter in...
Siri, who played Felix Leiter in Never Say Never Again? Siri's like fuck.
That might
up,
be a little
Siri.
Too.
All right, too here we go.
Siri.
Yes, never. Bernie Casey and Never Say Never Again.
And is he an African American?
He is an African American gentleman.
I feel really, really.
You should feel good and vindicated, but I should also feel good and vindicated because it was not an official Eon production. It is not in the Bond canon, as far as we know or care.
This is the best sort of we're both right. I feel like if Israel and Palestine could do what we just did, there would be peace in the Middle East. That was really, really nice.
We did a great job. So long, nerds. Find me on the internet doing nerdy things.
You know what? I think it's about time, Brian, don't you?
Yeah.
We're going to go get some lunch. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us.
Of course.
You can be found on Twitter. Your official handle is?
At Matt Myra, MattMira.
And you've got podcasts all over the internet.
So many podcasts. Listen to me on James Bonding. Listen to me on Star Trek The Next Conversation. Listen to me on formerly the Nerdist podcast, now the ID10T podcast. Listen to me. Occasionally, I'll do a Frasier podcast with Kevin Smith called Talk Salad and Scrambled Eggs. I also occasionally will do a podcast with Scott Mosier called Phoebe, Four Eyes and Beard. If you need me, you can find me.
Is that one done in the podcast palace that they have? The
The Smod Castle?
Yes.
The Smod Castle's been shut down for quite a while.
Oh, no. Not that long. A couple years, I guess.
It feels like quite a while to me. Yeah. We did a podcast with Will Wheaton live from there once, an episode of Nerdists from there. I have a ton of podcasts. Find me and watch The Goldbergs Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on ABC.
Fabulous. All right. Thanks again.
Bye. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.